Good morning. This is Scott Fryman, creator of Deconstructing the Beatles, a series of multimedia films about the composition and recording techniques of the Beatles. And you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Scrolling for May 9th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, you gave information to my students. You walked into my school on career day and told them all about your exciting career.
Oh, that was exciting. I'm sure they enjoyed that.
They did.
They enjoyed it.
They enjoyed listening to you. They had a great time listening to you. Thank you so much for coming in. It's exciting.
The barrage of Jolly Ranchers.
You're throwing candy at them. That is a rookie mistake, sir.
That is a rookie mistake. Trying to look for children to
children, look at you come happy. With me. I've got candy.
That's right. The seasoned professional teacher does not bribe their children.
Well, we do in other ways, but we use things that are more cerebral than sugar based.
That's right. Something that won't take out an eye.
We're whipping it at the kids. Here, kids, have some candy. It was good. They loved it. I love having career day. Having 28 people from the community come in and speak to my students is fantastic. They get a perspective that is different from what I give them every day.
Is this the part where we go bang? There's a warning coming.
Yes.
Yeah. This is very important, young. I'm sorry. This is very important. People who have mothers.
Hey, everybody! It's Mother's Day. It's on Sunday. Go now and get your plans together for what you're going to do for your mother on Sunday. She loves you and she wants you to call her.
She wants you to call her. She wants you to acknowledge her.
Maybe mow the lawn.
Maybe send a card. Maybe send a card.
Some flowers.
All right. So we should throw some Jolly Ranchers at her. The old days before there was Mother's Day. It wasn't always Mother's Day. There was a Mother's Day type of event.
Yeah.
But the modern Mother's Day, as we know Mother's Day, was started by Anna Jarvis back in what year?
1908. That is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
A less civilized time. So it started in Grafton, West Virginia. So it was a church, a Methodist church there, which I found out is a Methodist Episcopal church. So was it an Episcopal church or a Methodist church? I don't know. But regardless, this is where the first Mother's Day took place, and we all have been celebrating Mother since then.
Very good. Call your mother. She wants to hear from you. That's happy right. Mother's Day to our mothers and to our wives and to all of the rest of you. Happy Mother's Day. I got some surprises that I'm going to show you later. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Speaking of surprises, I got to go see a movie in a movie theater this week, Chip.
You're kidding me.
Late night, Saturday night, late at night, not watching Svengoolie. We went to go see The Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Did you have one of those seats that leans you back that makes it real comfortable?
And I don't use those seats any longer because when I do, I will fall asleep immediately. I am the old man that when he reclines his head, he falls asleep. So yes, I was sitting in one of those and not reclining.
So I got to see this opening night. So
Thursday.
Yes, I did. I went and the movie theater was packed.
Nice.
I was sent on a grocery store run
afterwards
at 9 o'clock at night. So I arrived at the movie theater right after that, and then got home about 1. So that was a terrible way to it's not a very effective way to watch movies. But what I will say that from the moment it started, there were giggles throughout the entire, I mean giggling, cackling,
yeah,
throughout the entire theater.
And it wasn't me. I was giggling and cackling in my showing too.
Steve's got a special cackle that that people seem to notice.
Stops comedy shows.
But I will say that was very joyful, especially that first scene.
Yes.
Where baby Groot's just jumping around and everybody's loving him.
Adorable. It is a fun movie. It is a valid sequel. I had very high expectations, and this met all of my expectations. The storyline is very strong. There's some father and son interaction? I don't want to spoil anything.
as he shows up dressed as God.
Right. This is Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell in the opening is young 1980 Kurt Russell. And I don't know that that was CGI. I think that Kurt Russell is just that handsome. They put the right wig on him and made him look like he's 1980 Kurt Russell.
And I will also mention that David Hasselhoff, I just thought was going to do the final scene.
The end song.
The end song. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say that the Hoff is still around.
The Hoff is in the house. Let's put it that way.
That was pretty awesome. And the last thing I want to leave with is not only did we all enjoy this movies, but we should all know that the Guardians of the Galaxy, these pirates, mm-hmm. I don't think they ever learn from their mistakes. They're constantly putting themselves in the same stupid positions they've set themselves up to be.
They are those comic book characters. Marvel has figured out that these are comic books and we're going to make a comic book movie that these people are not going to learn their lesson by the end.
Hey, you're pirates, but we're going to hire you to save us. Wait a minute, they stole from us too.
Wait. Hey, you guys.
You're pirates. And so they win again at the end, because that's what superhero shows are. And what do? They're still going to be the same stupid pirates for the next one.
The same thing. I love this movie. I love this almost as much as the original. The original still holds a real interesting spot in my heart, but this was really good.
Drax's backhanded compliments are always very funny.
He is so, so interesting.
They'll be pathetic like you. Not everyone is as pathetic as you. You're beautiful on the inside.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin too many of the lines, but Drax has some of the best lines, and he says them so straight. And the movie gives the audience a beat to think about what he just said. And what he said is just awful. And it's so well done. I really highly recommend this one.
Strap yourself in, Groot. We're going on a movie quest.
I also got a chance to see The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu.
It's a joyful movie.
Joyful.
To less than joyful movie.
Followed by dark dystopia. Those of you who've read The Handmaid's Tale, the 1985 novel, it is a dark dystopia about genetics and about how we might not be able to reproduce, and maybe we could find a group of people who can reproduce for us and we can basically enslave them.
Maybe your mom could be of Fred.
Oh boy. What a
crazy, crazy dystopian novel. I'm glad you got to see this. Now, this was released last month. You've got to see...
I'm three episodes in at this point. There are four episodes available on Hulu right now. I'm three episodes in. It is very dark, but it's got an interesting storyline running through it that I think it's going to drive well.
This story was meant for grown-ups, right?
Yes.
This is not, this is not a children's...
This is a TVMA. This has got rape and... all sorts of violence against women and some occasional nudity and lots of swear words, which surprised me.
But there's a story here, and it's one of those great stories, not any different than 1984. You know, it's a cautionary tale.
Yes.
And it's not as light as like the Mockingbird series.
It is not light at all. This is heavy, foot on your throat, heavy dystopia, thinking about what are we doing, who are we using as tools instead of humans.
And you read this book when you were a young person.
Yeah, this was one of those books that I was assigned in high school, and I really didn't get it. I did not understand it. And it's one of those books that I think I'm going to have to go back and read again, having seen the TV show.
Well, I'm going to read this book with you. And I think that the other part is that as soon as the series ends on Hulu, I think I'm going to get my Hulu month in so I can get it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks fascinating.
I do suggest it. I do suggest that you bank a few of them like I have and watch three or four of them at a time instead of having the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger of episode one is very interesting. They give the main character a name that she never had in the novel. In the novel, she was not named. She had her slave name, Offred, but she never had a non-slave name. Here in the first episode of this TV show, the last words of episode one, is My Name is June.
Oh, well, there it is, very deviating from the story.
Yeah, the author is very interested in how this is going to go, and so am I. So I will keep watching that one on Hulu. You got a chance to go to the movie theater at a reasonable time and see Deconstructing the Beatles. This one is all about Rubber Soul. We've talked about Deconstructing the Beatles before. This is Scott Fryman's lectures on the Beatles albums.
Exactly, and so this is the third one I saw. I saw the White Album, I saw Revolver, and now this was about Rubber Soul. And so Scott Fryman is a master expert on the Beatles. He's a master presenter of the Beatles material, and it is once again fascinating. This is about not only the tracks, how they came up with the ideas, maybe for the lyrics of them, where they came, the music came from, and then sort of what was going on around it. The story of this, why this becomes a, you can feel the pressure of it, is the Beatles just came off of a tour, and they were given roughly 30 days to get an album together, and it had to be released, had to be finished, so they could get it out for Christmas. And they had other things, other commitments on there too. They had a couple of concerts, I think, in Germany. They had to get a flexi disc available for all the Beatle fan club members. This was a nice presentation on the business side, as in, I've got to put together the product, mixed in with their skills at songwriting, at their ability to be artists. Man, this was a lot of fun. We should start off by saying that there are two versions of Rubber Soul. There is a UK version, and there is an American version. It's just basically the American side. We don't typically have as many tracks on our albums at that time as it did in England. So we're going to go through the English version of this. We have songs like Drive My Car, Norwegian Wood, This Bird Has Flown, Nowhere Man. There's a lot of classic songs on this. And when you recognize the pressure they had to get these things done, I think that they recorded four of these songs maybe in the last couple days. It just got down crunch time, and they had to bang these things out. The Beatles were skilled because they had a tremendous time in Germany when they were early, starting out and performing a lot. So they knew their instruments. And then they toured a lot. And what I learned also is their concerts were only about 30 minutes long. So they would go and play in your hometown, play 11 songs, 30 minutes.
That's so different from today's concerts.
That's amazingly different. Also, they were the first group to put together music videos.
Wow.
And so they had four or five singles off of this album, and they would record two or three different versions of those. And the idea behind that was they didn't have to fly out to your local television studio to perform. Oh, you'd say, oh, the Beatles are here,
and here's
just point over.
Nice.
And there's three versions of it, and the manager at the time could pick that version that they would like to play at that time.
That distribution channel of television was certainly growing. This is 1965, so that's in its heyday right there.
They were experimenting with the wacky weed in it, and there are plenty of recordings where they were taking breaks. So that was kind of funny.
Union smoke breaks.
But it looks like
we need to take a break.
That's exactly what it was. This was wonderful. The people who were there with me absolutely ate it up. There was a lady in front of me singing all the whole time. You don't mind it through this because, it's just wonderful.
You said there were about 50 people in the theater with you. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well we've had that before.
That's great.
And they were all people who were much older than I am.
Yeah. The Beatles definitely have some range. There's no doubt that there's some staying power on the Beatles from 1965.
I recommend this to anyone. I hope you can find them. And when they come around, if you want to join me, you're welcome to do so.
And you can go to Scott's website, BeatlesLectures.com, and get all this material from him. Good stuff.
Yes, yes.
You also got to see a movie about movie posters. A movie about movie posters. That's meta, dude.
24 by 36 is the movie I got to see. I got to watch it through iTunes, through Apple TV. It is in the theaters right now.
Uh-huh.
This is a movie about those painted movie posters that we knew
those
as a kid.
Classics.
E.T. where the fingers are touching.
Nice.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars, Jaws. We grew up in a movie theater where they had these great big posters,
mm-hmm.
and artists painted those. They either created the feeling that you were supposed to have from this. They were to give you something intriguing to look at, and then they also had depth to them. You could continue to stare at them, and you could find little nuggets throughout the whole thing. This way of advertising started, I don't know, maybe about the 30s, 40s, 50s.
With all those classics, with all the monster movies,
sure.
and the scary sci-fi movies. I love those posters.
And I get that, because there are plenty of collectors out there. We go through the collector's market of that, and people really love that. That was something as a young person for your grandparents, or maybe your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their way of seeing the commercials of things coming. Mm-hmm. And you could pick out the movies you wanted to see going forward. Today's movie posters are so different mm-hmm. from that. Usually they're pictures. They want pictures of the stars. They want to know that Vin Diesel is in this movie.
Right.
Or The Rock's in this movie.
And nobody else, just those two people.
Today's posters, they kind of stack the faces like it's Mount Rushmore. Yeah, they got the star and then the other stars. Yeah.
If it's a rom-com, it's the two people with their backs to each other. That's every poster. Poster is the same now.
And they're all blue and they're all orange. Yeah. So they kind of put it together. And there's a reason for
there's
that.
There's marketing. I get it.
All right. And part of the reason is we watch movies off of our smartphones. We mm-hmm. watch them off the Apple TV. We watch them off our computers. And to be able to have those posters, I mean, they're like smaller than your thumb.
Thumbnail size, yeah.
So there's a sense for that. And also places like Walmart, if they're going to sell the DVDs,
mm-hmm.
they want to have the stars pictures. So that idea of the nuance, or to be able to look at the art of the Goonies or something, it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah. I remember being at the Blockbuster and working with the cover art, and displaying the cover art at Blockbuster was a big part of the job. And again, that's a much smaller size than a full-size poster, and the art changes as a result.
Well, there's good news, Steve, because those people who enjoyed the artistic way of looking at these movies, well, there is a sort of an underground movement. There are conventions for it. There are people who still paint them. So they actually contact movie studios. The movie studio gives them the right to paint a movie poster like an old school one.
Nice.
Maybe, or even what today's sensibilities would mm-hmm. be. And they will have limited runs of those. Some of the artists will have limited runs. Some will continue the runs forever. But really what it allows you to do is, if you are a person who wants to collect that type of art,
mm-hmm.
you can go and you can pick up all sorts of stuff. There,
very cool.
There are artists that are really, really hot. They're in high demand. And there are people who are trying to break into that type of industry. So for people who are very visual, like I am very visual, this is just a really sweet, sweet movie. You get a couple of interviews with some of the great artists of the past who did these that you didn't know their names. You get some modern artists, and you get some commentary.
Very cool. That's 24x36, a movie about movie posters. Opening this week, there are movies opening this week, although they are all under Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Well, some of them think they may not be. If you were in England, Steve, probably there is something coming out that you get a movie of maybe every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, this year's version of King Arthur is called King Arthur Legend of the Sword, directed by Guy Ritchie.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
You'll have a good time watching that.
It's a great story. King Arthur's a great story.
It is, and Guy Ritchie is a very skilled director.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The Sherlock Holmes he did with Robert Downey Jr., mm-hmm. a lot of fun. He's got great stuff. So no one's going to be...
probably that.
Yeah. No one's going to be disappointed about going to see King Arthur.
King Arthur and your kniggets. The other one is called Snatched. This is Goldie Hawn, friend of Kurt Russell, and Amy Schumer.
That's right. I looking at the ad for this... The one that I enjoy most, the little scene I enjoy most, is when she has to give her password.
Her PIN number.
Her PIN number, that's yeah. right. And it's...
1, 2, 3, 4.
Goldie Hawn's character puts her hand in her face. Like,
that's your PIN number?
And Amy
that's
Schumer...
That's the combination of my luggage.
And Amy Schumer immediately says, I was going to change it.
This looks like fun. It looks like a good Mother's Day movie, mother and daughter.
Sure.
I could see Goldie Hawn and Amy Schumer being mother and daughter. I think that works well for casting.
In fact, I'm for a person who's typically not drawn to Amy Schumer's comedy,
mm-hmm.
I think this is her at her best.
That's a good hook.
I think this is going to be a joyful type of yes. Film that many people will enjoy.
There's also one called Paris Can Wait. This is one of those...
Breakfast Can Wait, Steve. Breakfast can wait.
Breakfast can wait.
bring out the Prince album.
Oh, that's a great story. Look up that story when you have a chance, kids. Charlie Murphy, rest in peace, but what a great story that was. Paris Can Wait is one of those, take your wife and go to a film that is for adults.
It's did you say an adult film?
No, I did not say an adult film.
Adult film.
No, this has a mature...
A grown-up film.
A grown-up movie, not grown-ups. this is a movie about relationships and about marriage, and it looks great.
So if you're with your wife, and your wife says, my brain will crack if we have to go see...
another Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Stop taking me to all these superhero movies.
And you say, well there's
we can watch Twin Peaks.
Let's go see Paris Can Wait.
Yeah. My wife would definitely be in for that after all of the junk movies that I've made her watch for the last 20 years. Happy Mother's Day, honey. Brings us to our book of the week, and I got a chance to read the brand new Daniel Suarez novel. This one is called Change Agent.
Now, this was just released in April.
This was just released 2 weeks ago. It took me two weeks to get through it, but I got through because I love Daniel Suarez. Daniel Suarez is one of my favorite authors working right now. He writes techno thrillers. So for me, as a person who knows about computers and looks at the future of technology, mm-hmm. he's looking at it from the perspective of what could go wrong. What could go so horribly that it could become a dystopic kind of conversation? Change Agent, he's looking specifically at genetic engineering.
It's the year 2045, distant future.
No, that's not very distant at all.
Oh my goodness.
This is right around the corner. 2045, the main character here is an Interpol police officer. Mm-hmm. He is investigating all of the things that he needs to investigate internationally, and he walks down the street one day and somebody injects him with something, and genetically he becomes the bad guy that he's been hunting.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Terrifying.
Wow.
This is terrifying. We think about genetic engineering right now and all the benefits that we could glean from this. Finding the defects and going, here, I can solve blindness. I can solve whatever genetic defect we have. But the question becomes, where do the defects start and end? Can we design our children mm-hmm. to be perfect, to be whatever genetic makeup we think is the thing that's going to make them successful?
Well, in fact, designer could, I mean, you can see it already in fashion and stuff like that. All of a sudden people want to have holes in their ears mm-hmm. And stuff like that. All of a sudden you could have designer defects, as in, like, that's the way I want to be.
Wow. Like the jeans are already ripped at the store.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Jeans being G-E-N-E-S.
Maybe I want to have Popeye arms.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible. Daniel Suarez is really good at finding all the possibilities and then scaring the hell out of us by saying, here's what could happen, and it's not your choice that this is going to happen. Somebody else chooses for you.
This sounds like a fascinating summer read.
Fantastic. I really highly recommend all of Daniel Suarez's novels up to this point. This is not my favorite of the five, mm-hmm. but it is certainly a really good story. It's more adventure than it is techno. So for me, as a computer nerd, yeah, right. I love that kind of music. It just repeats over and over and over again. For me as a computer nerd, this is not my favorite. My favorite is Demon, which is fantastic exploration of what we could be looking at with the internet and all of the technology. This is really good. It's called Change Agent. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our appetite or app of the week. And boy, speaking of technology that is just exploding.
Oh, absolutely. There was an update to the Google Street View over the last few weeks. And if you haven't used Google Street View, imagine being able to go to your computer and then log in and then walk down the street of some foreign place.
In a virtual way, but still, you have pictures from almost any street around the world because Google sent a car and a camera and taken pictures of every street around the world. Not scary at all.
Well, they've also been able to do it to go through museums.
Mm-hmm.
They've also been able to go to historical monuments.
Yeah, the White House. Have you seen the one from the White House? They brought the camera through the hallways of the White House, and you can travel the hallways of the White House virtually. Yeah.
Oh.
It's amazing where we're at with all this technology.
Well, this is fascinating stuff. And these are high definition pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You can immediately see how this will evolve. I mean, it's almost Star Trek-like, Steve.
Holodeck.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
When you get your virtual reality goggles, I have a class set of virtual reality goggles, and we go on virtual field trips in class. We put on the virtual reality goggles, and they can literally walk around. Okay, if they actually literally walk around, they fall down because the goggles impede their eyes. But they can literally see around all of the historic monuments that we can think of. Go see a volcano. Third hour.
That's right. Inside something that is dangerous, too dangerous to be in.
It's amazing.
Oh, it is. It truly is. We live in magic times.
Yeah, we live in magic times, and it just keeps getting better. And Daniel Suarez keeps writing novels about how it's going to get scarier, which is great. Brings us to our Now the News. Microsoft is making things better. They have two new products that they rolled out this week. The first is called a Surface Notebook. This is a laptop from Microsoft.
Well, I've heard about those.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
It's a pretty cool idea. The first one that they rolled out is $1,000. Mm-hmm. It is the competitor to the MacBook Air, but it's running Windows. Microsoft wants everybody to have access to their operating system.
Well, the MacBook Air is wonderful. It's got great battery life. Mm-hmm. It's light. It does all the things that most people need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually may be more powerful than what many people need.
And it's got that Apple logo on it. And people look at that Apple logo and go, oh, I don't know how to use an Apple. I use Windows. I know how to use Windows. I can't switch to a Mac because it's confusing.
Actually, you could. It's real simple.
I know. I tell people that all the time. But Windows is the default. A lot of people think of a computer.
And Windows is a great operating system.
Absolutely. Too. So this new Surface Notebook is great. They are also going to roll out a $200 version, and it's going to be running their new operating system called Windows 10S.
And this is a competitor to Google Chrome.
Yes. This is the Chrome operating system, that Chromebook that all of our students got this school year so that they had one-to-one devices. Microsoft looked at that and went, we would like some of that money, please.
Well, for many people, a Google Chrome is all they need.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to play YouTube videos. You can go to and you can use their the word processing, the spreadsheets, all those things. It's not the most powerful. It's designed to be very inexpensive, and it does the job enough of it.
Yep.
You don't need the strongest chips. You're not running those types of processes that just demand that.
But this Microsoft device is a little bit more powerful and allows you a little bit more of those tools. Mm-hmm. Microsoft Word instead of Google Docs. Microsoft Excel.
People are more trained on Word.
That's right. We have trained our brains to work with those programs, and those programs are a little more powerful. They have a little bit bigger, broader toolbox than the Google stripped-down version.
I'm wondering if these are going to become business alternative machines.
They might be.
And I really do mean it, because computers date themselves very, very quickly.
Right.
If you could get through, if they last only a couple of years, you're only paying a couple hundred bucks for them.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. And then it becomes a matter of recycling them, just kind of figuring out a way to be able to pull the stuff out, put the new stuff in.
Do you remember when we had something called a netbook?
Yes.
The netbooks were supposed to be this, but boy, they were underpowered and they did not work the way that they should.
And they were book size. They were really small.
Right. This is the netbook of the 21st century, and I really look forward to the competition between Google and Microsoft here.
Well, Apple is being drawn into this, too, because the education market is such a big market. Microsoft is afraid of losing this generation of people using their tools.
Right.
Once you look at a spreadsheet and just say, well, it's just a spreadsheet program, then Microsoft loses its luster.
I agree. So they are trying really hard, and they're doing good things. I really have good high hopes for this. I did go to the Microsoft store this week and do a STEM camp. My 11-year-old built a sensor that operated a robot, a 25-cent kit they have that you can bring into schools and have kids learn how to manipulate robots with this 25 cents worth of material.
How wonderful.
It's wonderful. It's great stuff. Look into what Microsoft is doing. Hulu is doing something. They are moving into the live TV space, that space that is full right now with YouTube TV and Sling TV and PlayStation View. Hulu Live TV launched this week. They have 50 channels, $40 a month.
Well, it seems like that everyone's getting involved in this. So we have Hulu, we have YouTube, we have Sony PlayStation View, we have a DirecTV Now. I mean, you have Sling TV. I mean, what's happening is we're seeing what the, when I say I'm doing quote signs, the real price mm-hmm. of television is. Mm-hmm. And people are going to right-size. Now, there are things missing out of this that you may have some interest in.
Yeah, like all of these offerings, this offering has a suite of channels. They have all of the NBC channels, all of the CBS channels, which is very interesting because CBS is not on Hulu, but it's on Hulu Live TV. All of the CBS channels are there. All the Disney channels are there. Some of the Time Warner channels, including the Cartoon Network and Boomerang, and two of the Scripps channels, HGTV and Food Network, are both in this package. But no Viacom, no MTV, no Nickelodeon, no BBC America, which is kind of a deal killer for me. And they do have the local channels, CBS, NBC, and ABC in your local area, but not the local channels, the WGN TV here in Chicago, okay. or PBS. There's no PBS offering here.
Which they're, I'm assuming, thinking you're going to get off antenna then. For our area, we could get WGN.
Right.
And we also could get PBS.
Correct.
All right. So anyway, this is fascinating. And another player.
Another option.
We'll figure out, they'll eventually figure out what we are really demanding.
Right.
And then these other channels will all kind of figure out what they're willing to offer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sort of how they're going to present their channels, whether there's a reduced price for them or whatever. Advertisers, in fact, it's not in our notes, but I'm going to go ahead and say this. Advertisers on television are immediately taking notice. This week, the price drop, they're not willing to pay
mm-hmm.
for
television advertising.
Perceived advertising.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to require harder numbers. So this may be a way that they can kind of justify those numbers.
Oh, yeah. They can certainly pull the numbers a lot easier when you are pulling the data through the internet as opposed to over the antenna.
Through these services, they can say, Steve is watching a lot of HGTV.
Steve is this age, and he has this demographic, and he makes this much money, and he's watching this much HGTV.
Steve's at work all day, yet somehow HGTV runs all the time.
No, Netflix runs MST3K The Return all day, even though Steve's at work. Those numbers are much higher. I wonder why. Hey, everybody, look at these numbers.
There'll be some database somewhere in some far-off region
yes.
that just is running these. Just keep running them.
Just keep running them. We've got those all over the country right now, Chip.
That's right.
We're making those numbers happen. So we do have servers all over the world, all over the country, and we need to be secure. We need to make sure that we are securing
this stuff. This is a story that deals with something that's close to Steve right here. Steve's a teacher.
Right.
And this has to do with a lot of billionaires' yachts.
So
this is definitely something that Steve needs to pay attention to.
Yeah, my yacht. Lovey, my yacht is not secure from cyber pirates.
Exactly. All right, so the point of this is that there was an article basically showing that there are pirates out there, bad people, who are taking over.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right. People's yachts, because their Wi-Fi and their computer systems are not secure.
Right.
All right, now, they're not designed to be that secure.
Right.
And why this is important is that there are things that you're going to be using in your home,
mm-hmm.
and there are things that you're going to add to your home that are going to have these same type of issues. You may think this doesn't apply to you because you're not a billionaire and you don't have a yacht, but those things may eventually trickle down to you.
Because all of those computerized things in your home, light bulbs that are attached to the internet, anything, the Internet of Things, it all needs to be secured. Your car can connect to the internet.
Sure.
And if the bad guys want to get into the computer in your car, they can do that. And we need to be very secure.
And on the simple level, what they're doing is they're coming in and they'll take over your computer systems mm-hmm. in your yacht, for this example.
Lovely.
And make it, you can't use it. So
my yacht is a zombie and it's attacking MSN.
Exactly. So what ends up happening is they'll ask for a ransom. You give them the ransom, and they'll release us. This is not any different than what's going on in hospitals, mm-hmm. where people are taking over the computer records.
Right. There.
All right, so we've got these two things that are happening. And over the next few years, the new stuff that will come out will have some additional security features on it. So we just need to kind of follow this and just be aware of things that we can do to help secure our Internet of Things.
It's a 3-hour tour. Let's bring all of the clothing we could possibly carry. We don't know what we're going to need. Should I do my Jim Backus impression for the rest of the show, Chip?
I think you should.
It's good stuff. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
I think we do, Steve. Only if we can come back next week.
Oh, have the servant bring the Benz around. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can find all the news that you need at our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future.